Ninja News Japan has complained many, many times, maybe too many times, that the biggest problems in Japan sort of are part of the issue is that the leadership of Japan is very old. Most politicians are very old. These older people, they haven't updated their way of thinking. These old men, they got those biases from the 60s and 70s still taking hold in their brain. They think the world hasn't changed. They haven't updated their point of view. Odate City has decided to take a stand. Not really. They just voted in a guy who's probably capable. They elected the youngest mayor in Japan at 27 years old. At 27 years old, I think 26 or 27 is when I graduated university because I'd messed up university so bad, which is very embarrassing to say, actually. It's pretty sad. And then I think the Prime Minister of Canada, so at 27, I was essentially at that point a failure. I hadn't done anything right yet. The Prime Minister of Canada is the same age as me. And so this is, you shouldn't compare yourself. He actually had an advantage in that his father was the Prime Minister of Canada previously, and they were very rich. He had like sort of legacy money, old money. I didn't have that. I was, certainly didn't suffer in my life, I'll be really honest. But I don't think anyone would go around calling us rich, extravagantly so. I wasn't in a position to start making campaigns to run for Prime Minister. Maybe that's what held me back. So I should blame my parents. There you go. Just blame our parents for everything. And the old people who are running the country. And this is why we should elect 27-year-olds to be the mayor of a city, because, yeah, of sure, of course we should. In a statement after he was elected, he said he wanted to attract businesses that appeal to the young people. He wants to address population decline. And these are his sort of his main agenda goals. So it's an interesting idea, like what businesses appeal to young people and they should take the forefront versus, you know, Japan has an aging population, so we should cater to them. That's a nice different point of view. He's a young guy. He's like, hey, we should think about young people who are growing up. This should be their world as well. Maybe even more so. The addressing population decline. So far, no politician has come out with a policy that actually is going to have any impact that's real. And so I'm not very hopeful that this guy's going to have. Oh, he might. He might actually, again, be new way of thinking. Maybe he'll have an idea that I haven't thought of. All my ideas have been pretty basic. Don't make people work overtime so they can go out and actually meet other people. Like, that's the kind of stuff I think is really important when it comes to this topic. There was a very progressive high school. They were making headlines because they were doing such cool things. They were essentially doing away with school rules. They were lauded as progressive in what is a very restrictive and old system. So this is maybe like our young mayor. They're deciding, like, we're going to change the way things work. 20 students were practicing a hip-hop dance. And they were practicing this for, there's an end of year, every year they have sort of like this celebration. They put on shows. They do this very Japanese thing. They have sports days, stuff like that. Part of this was going to be putting on, the dance club was going to put on a dance. They decided on this hip-hop dance. The principal said he wanted a different kind of dance where everyone is the main person. So basically it seems like, from what I can extrapolate, because they didn't give you like perfect explanations, the hip-hop dance had a couple of main members and maybe a bunch of supporting people. And he's like, that's not fair. I want everyone to maybe be dancing in concert so that everyone is the main person. I understand this point of view, but it is also quite stupid. I understand it as a point of view. I clearly don't agree with it. That's why I think it's quite stupid. I remember going to a elementary school to see one of these kids' plays. And because you got like 20, 30 kids, and that most stories actually only have about 3 or 4 main characters, it's really hard to come up with other characters. Maybe it was a story in Ninja News Japan. I saw one where they had like Goldilocks, let's say, and Goldilocks was played by 3 girls at the exact same time. So the 3 girls rolled out and they all said the lines together. They said one line at a time, that kind of stuff. They were trying to make sure that everyone got to participate, but then they also wanted to make sure everyone was the main. There was a story and it was like they had 10 or 15 Snow Whites, and they weren't like, come on, do a line and then swap out the Snow Whites. They were all on stage at the same time, and which is, of course, ridiculous. Most shows, you'll have a couple of main and then support. That's not an unusual or unreasonable thing. The principal decided this was not acceptable. Everyone's got to be the main. So maybe just a single coordinated dance that everyone does together. The students went to him and said, no, man, we want to do our hip hop dance. It's part of our performance at the festival. This is what we've decided to do. The parents said it was unfair. So they sent a letter that, like, the kids have already been practicing. They organized this. It's their club. how can you come in at this later stage and tell them not to do the dance they've already decided they want to do? The news story said there was a high school bans hip hop. That's not actually the case. I actually get very frustrated now that I read a lot of news for Ninja News Japan. I get very frustrated at misleading titles because they're trying to clickbait you into reading it. I kind of understand that, but also you don't want to be deceptive. There was one last week. It was like man bumps shoulder of other man and gets stabbed. And then it should have been by an umbrella, because getting stabbed and getting stabbed by an umbrella is not fun, but it's not sort of the same caliber as getting stabbed by a knife, which is what you would assume if you read the phrase stabbed. 46 parents signed a letter. The principal does not listen to the parents or the students and just decided to hold on to this, like you cannot do this hip hop dance. Now, this seems really weird. You had this school that was incredibly progressive. How did it get this way? Like, how did they get to this point? Well, it's very clear, actually. 2014 to 2019, you had Principal Kuda. And it was a very progressive person who wanted to make a very progressive school. Got a lot of media attention, and there was a lot of growth. It went from 384 students to 570. So this was appealing to students. Students wanted to go to this school. They wanted this experience that they weren't getting in other schools. 2023, Principal Horikoshi takes over. 2023, Principal Horikoshi takes over. So you know that's already going to have a different thing. And Principal Horikoshi says they want to rebuild the school. Now, you know when someone has done a ton of reforms and then someone else comes in and takes over and says, I'm going to rebuild the school. What they're actually saying is, I'm going to take the school, take all this stuff you've done and changed in advance, and I'm going to roll all that shit back. I'm going to take it back to what it was at the beginning. I'm going to make this the most traditional school I can. And, you know, everything's going to be super awesome because it's going to be back the way it should be. So this is, again, old people thinking, traditional way of doing things, not successful. So 2023, standardized tests were brought back into the school. So between 2014 and 2019, there were no tests as we know them. There was probably sort of like checks and things, and they did talk to the students. They made sure they understood stuff because they probably still had to do national tests and exams to get into universities. But within the school, they were taking away this pressure of the test. They wanted the students to study and learn and grow. 2024, back to uniforms. So this school had done away with the school uniform. 2024 comes along. Horikoshi says, you know what? We've brought back tests. We're going to bring back the uniform. We're bringing back all the shit that was done away with that maybe is unnecessary. I don't know. But the question is, so under Principal Kuda, the progressive principal, the school almost doubled in size, student body-wise. In the 2 years Horikoshi took over, the enrollment of students has dropped to 346, which is actually below the initial level of 2014. So in 2014, it was 384. Horikoshi's now driven it down to about 40 people less than that, which shows you just how good his ideas were. But of course, they're not going to take any responsibility for that and just say, I'm putting things back the way they should be. I've rebuilt the school by tearing down half the student body. Japan is famous for not having that many guns, not having any guns. They have very strict rules. And so there's not a lot of shootings. Actually, over the last 2 weeks, there's been a lot of stabbing stories in the news. There's been about three or four. There was a lady, her ex-husband had a restraining order. He came into a cafe, he stabbed her and she died. He stabbed her in the neck. Staff, like five people held him down till the police came. There's been a couple of like just inter-family stabbings. This to me actually says it's good we don't have guns. Japan is famous for not having many guns, very strict gun rules. One of the gun rules I know is that if you register a gun, you have a gun, you have to register it, that's given. That means the police can come into your house at any point, any time, and check on the sort of well-being of the gun. So 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm in my bed, I sleep like a vampire. I actually didn't realize this until very recently. Like I lie on my back with my hands kind of on my chest, and I realized like I basically just sleep like a vampire. I've taken on a lot of vampire attributes in my old age. I don't go out in the sun if I can avoid it because the sun hurts me. I haven't gone full vampire yet. I'll just wait and see. Maybe that's like an evolutionary thing that happens over time. What happened? Oh, the police. This is the problem with tangents is I actually lose the point where I go off on the tangent. The police can come into your house. So it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you're sleeping, I assume not like a vampire. They knock on your door. They ring your doorbell. You come down. You're like, oh, Richard Grock. He's like, dude, it's 4 o'clock. And they're like, yeah, where's your gun? And then they can just walk into your house. They don't need a warrant or anything. You basically sign away the right to essentially privacy if you have a gun in Japan. You have to allow the police to come in and just check, is your gun loaded? Is it unloaded? Is it locked away? Is everything taken care of? If there's a mistake, they just take the gun away. That's, I don't know. I don't think that's a terrible system. I know I'm not American, so Americans who listen to this might be like very like, I disagree. You should have, you know, the freedom to buy as many guns as possible. I actually have no problem with volume if you're responsible. This guy, this Sapporo man who's 59 years old, he was arrested for having 33 handguns. And he said he bought them for fun. He had 5 handguns and 28 imitation handguns without any ammunition. But he also had no reason that was permitted by law. So he didn't have a reason for having the guns. I've talked a couple times about if you are searched by the police and you have like a Swiss Army knife. I used to carry a Swiss Army knife with me everywhere I went. Found out in Japan, carrying a knife is illegal unless you carry it for a reason. So you have to say, why do you have this? Police stop you, check your bag. They look in your bag. They find a Swiss Army knife. They go, why do you have this? And you go, oh, I just carry it with me just in case. They're like, that's illegal. You say, oh, well, I'm going camping tonight. I want it with me for kindling or something, or I want to screw something in, whatever. Then you have a reason, then it is legal. So if I buy a knife at a shop, I can obviously take it home. I could take a fish scaling knife with me when I go fishing. But if I just carry a knife around, that's illegal. So you have to have a reason for having a knife with you. This is kind of the same statement for guns. He has no legal reason for having these guns. He's not permitted by law. The interesting thing that I found was this was actually discovered by the Cyber Patrol. So Japan has like a section called the Cyber Division, the Cyber Patrol. They primarily try to deal with scams, but they also come across information like this, like, hey, this guy, I'm assuming, has bought guns online or is talking about guns. So they went and searched his house. They go search his house. They find, oh, where's the number? In his garage, he had 100 other guns and rifles with no ammunition. So he's clearly just a collector, a guy who likes guns. He has no intention of shooting them because he doesn't have any ammunition. So for me, I'm like, this guy may be more responsible because he's like, yeah, I got all these guns, but none of them are functional. They're just big sticks at this point. I like the way they look. He's clearly not even using them or practicing with them. He's just really likes guns. So I'm really torn on whether I think this is okay or not. Because having the gun is just one step away from getting ammunition. So he has a bad day, gets the ammunition, and then off he can go with like 20 guns on a belt along his chest. He doesn't have to reload. He's just pulling them out, shooting and dropping. So who knows what could go wrong? I understand the potential danger. But up to this point, it seems like the guy just really likes having his gun collection. But of course, it does seem like he's done it illegally. I have been buying guns as a hobby for 15 years. I have never fired any of them. I actually believe that statement. If he had no ammunition in his house at all, I actually believe that he did not ever fire the gun. I think that's true. But 15 years he's been collecting guns, it does seem like he's been doing it illegally, so there is a problem there. The investigation is now ongoing to find out how he bought them, but the fact that the Cyber Patrol discovered this, I'm betting it's just like online auctions or one-on-one deals, I don't know. But clearly this is all happening over the internet. In August, a crowdfunding project was started to create a town. Now, Japan has a lot of sort of small towns that are empty. They're ghost towns. And so this group was like, hey, what we'll do is we'll get 500 million yen. We'll essentially buy this town. We'll restructure this town. We'll create this town. And it's going to be for women only. I had a conversation on a different podcast about the women only cars. And I was like, look, Chikan exists. Chikan is the guys who will get on the train and they'll push up behind you and they'll touch you. That's disgusting. It's gross. I actually was wondering very early on why there are not more cameras in Japanese train cars, because I'd heard about this issue before. So why did the security things already not exist? But maybe there's a privacy issue I'm unaware of. It being public transportation, though, I think there is no expectation of privacy, so they should have cameras in the cars. But regardless, they decided, let's just make a car women only. And a bunch of sort of men dicks, they were like, ooh, this is unfair. Why do they get their own car and stuff? Oh, I should be able to use it, freedom and all that stuff. And I'm like, if everyone would stop touching them, it would not be a problem. So if they need a safe place to travel, they should have a safe place to travel. The town, though, takes on a sort of different feeling, sort of a misandry kind of feeling. The goal was to make 500 million yen. They were going to get a deserted village and rebuild it, and only women could enter. Now, there is a constitutional issue with this in Japan. The constitution in Japan dictates freedom of travel. And this became a problem during COVID and lockdown, because it's, you can't lock down people if your constitution says people have the right to move around. So there's your first actual issue, is like, we want everyone to stay home in their house. We can't mandate that. We can only ask very nicely, because we can't make it a rule that would defy the constitution. This does something very similar. You're a man, you're saying, I can't come into this town because of my gender. That defies the constitution. So constitutionally, they already have a legal issue where this probably would not be enforceable. You could build a town. You could try to get a majority of the residents to be women, but I don't think you'd be able to deny men entry into your town. But that was the stated goal, was to have this town and only women could enter. Now, I actually weirdly don't have a problem with that either. Like, if you don't want me in your town, I'm kind of okay with not going to your town, but you know, other people would have a problem with it. They want to make a political statement and whatnot. You can't lock off one gender on anything and expect to be successful, I think, but whatever. Project managers, they were recruiting, and they wanted to recruit from only women. It was very recently canceled. And so the website where it was is now just doing a 404. This doesn't exist anymore. One of the statements was, we tried to raise funds on a platform created by men. So misogyny has been blamed for the failure of this project. When, if it was crowdfunding, if you only want women to be in this town, you have to expect only women to crowdfund it. Maybe they must have assumed that the idea was that women would contribute to this town, and then women would live in this town. Is there enough women who are going to contribute to this? Is there enough women who actually agree that will do this, is actually the question. Clearly not. The fact that it was just shut down so suddenly, maybe there was another issue there. And that might be back at the legal issue that I stated earlier. The legal issue may be the thing that was actually holding them back, because you're essentially not allowed to do this in Japan. There would be other countries where if you wanted to make a town with only a certain amount of people or a certain kind of people can come in, that might be legal. Like, you might be able to create rules for your town that are separate from the national rules. In Japan, you can't do that. I think that would probably be more likely the bigger problem than just not getting enough money. I'm pretty sure they did not get enough money as well. So did enough women contribute? If they did, they're just breaking the law, probably. But realistically, I don't think enough women are on board with this idea to actually contribute all that money, because how many women are actually going to live in that town? It would only be, to me, the townspeople would be willing to contribute the money. Like, if I am a woman, I'm not going to contribute to a town that I'm not going to live in. Maybe I could go visit. It would be an interesting tourist spot. But how much money would you be willing to put up in the first place? I have to get some women's opinions. This is a one-person podcast, which makes that very difficult because, as it turns out, I'm a man. Nagoya University of Arts has refused a request from the union, so sort of the student union, maybe teachers union, actually just said union in the article now that I think about it, to release a report. There have been multiple allegations of sexual harassment of the university president, the University of Nagoya, Nagoya University of Arts. It's a very interesting thing that has happened. So this guy clearly has been harassing people, probably students. The students reported this, and then an internal investigation was created, and that internal investigation found something, but now won't say what they found. The report was set up by the Educational Corporation, and they stated it cannot be accepted that any sexual harassment warranting punishment took place. Very interesting phraseology. I'm always very careful about the phraseology of an article, of a statement made by someone in the news. So they're saying sexual harassment warranting punishment took place. So they're not saying that sexual harassment didn't take place. They're just saying he doesn't deserve to be punished for the sexual harassment that did take place. So maybe they're saying he made comments, and those comments are not deserving of punishment. Maybe he touched someone, but he didn't touch them bad enough to warrant punishment. So we don't know what their scale is. and their scale should actually match the law. So in the law in Japan, if you say stuff to people, that's sexual harassment. So actually, if you've even said anything, it is probably breaking the law. But this does actually confirm some kind of sexual harassment actually happened. Newspaper found out about this, and they were like, they started doing sort of an investigation. They talked to some people, and they were like, we know sexual harassment happened, and we do feel that it warrants punishment. The investigative group was four internal members, one senior. So basically you had three people and their boss were the group investigating the person. So the boss is going to say, look, we don't want this university president to get in trouble. We're going to cover for him. And the three other people were like, you're our boss. I want to keep my job. So yes, we're going to agree. The unions demanded they set up a third party probe, which I do not think is going to happen. The statement was that the students are not willing to engage in dialogue. So they're like, we can't set up a third party probe because when we tried to talk to them, the students didn't want to talk to us. The students didn't want to talk to essentially the friends who were covering for the person who sexually harassed them is the issue they ran into. And they're like, well, we tried and they just didn't want to talk to us. They didn't want to say the things that we wanted them to say. So a third party isn't going to do any better. So there's no reason to have a third party organization do a probe. Then they came out and had to make an actual statement. The actual statement was the perpetrator's rights must be protected as well, which is something I sort of agree with. They do have some rights, but the rights to not get punished because you don't like it or you don't want them to get punished isn't one of those rights. So the fact is, this is just a cover up. Clearly sexual harassment did happen. This internal group, this investigative group, is trying to cover it up. And now they're getting public attention. They're like, we have to protect the human rights of the perpetrator, not just the victims. But that also would imply that they are the perpetrator, that they have done something, and they should get punished.